Hi.
I'm Peter Chapman from the University of Virginia, and with my colleagues Yan Huan and David Evans, I'd like to present some ideas we have on building privacy-preserving applications on smartphones and mobile devices. So I'm going to open up with an observation, and that is the sheer amount of private information people carry around on their smartphones. And these are devices people have all day, every day, carry around everywhere. And we have you have your contacts, address book, messages, email, documents, photos, videos, social networks, browsing history, browser passwords, billing and payment information through services like Google Docs and Square. Google Wallet and Square, and even Mint. And we have this with us all day long, so it's besides just allowing us to view it ourselves, it'd be cool if we can interact with others in the world around us with this private information. And an example of such an application, I'm going to refer to as mutual contact discovery or common contacts. And that is, we have two users that want to see if they know anyone in common or who they know in common. And basically finding the intersection of their address books, their emails, the email addresses in their address book, and the phone numbers. And this is pretty simple to implement. You could just send the entire address book over to the other device. But you don't necessarily trust the other person, and even if you do, you don't really want them to know everyone in your address book. You could also hash it, but again, if you have a good idea of what you're looking for, say the area code, you can afterwards, with some processing power, reverse engineer their entire address book. So this is obviously not acceptable for people to use in everyday and in practice, to be sharing their address book with just strangers. And so is there a way to interact with others in interesting ways while protecting our data and keeping control of it? And the traditional solution to do this is using mutually trusted third party. The problem with that is mutually trusted third parties aren't always trustworthy. These are just a handful of examples from the last few months of severe privacy leaks. Sony and the PlayStation Network debacle lost 70 million. They lost the personal information of 70 million users, real-world addresses, email addresses, passwords, user IDs, etc. Another example, Epsilon. They send out 40 billion emails annually on behalf of 2,500 corporate clients, which include 7 of the Fortune 10. And they lost the real names and the email addresses of each of those recipients. And I know I got probably a dozen emails telling me that my personal information was compromised. Another example that hit really close to home was Dropbox, the popular cloud file sharing service, storage service. And they went a few hours where, on their website, the password field was not enforced. For every single one of their 25 million users, if you had the username, you could enter in any password you wanted and get into all of their account information. That's pretty bad. So is there a way that we can still maintain control? Can we keep our own information, interact with others without relying on mutually trusted third party? And this is where a subfield of cryptography, secure computation, can come in very handy. Specifically, I'm going to be talking about Yao's garbled circuit protocol, developed theoretically in the 80s. And this allows two parties, each with their own private data. So we have party Bob with A and Alice with B, and they want to compute a function on those inputs, F, they agree upon it, to yield some result. If they follow the garbled circuit protocol, they'll be able to do this. They'll get the result X without compromising or even sharing their private data with the other party. And this is a pretty powerful primitive that we can use to do things such as finding the common contacts between two users. And there are many potential potential applications. I should also mention that the garbled circuit protocol works for any function whatsoever, and it works for an arbitrary number of parties. So you don't need only two people. It can be 8. It can be 100. So for multi-party applications, you could think of collective voting. We vote as a collective without anyone cryptographically revealing their vote or their ranking or their bid in an auction. Another example might be we have a few business contacts, and we want to schedule a meeting together without revealing when we're available or when we're not available. So following, you could think of an application that jointly computes the best free time for all of us without anyone revealing anything more about their schedule. And another observation to make is that since we can do these functions without revealing the inputs, I can interact with others without risking my own private data. So for the common context example, I don't have to initiate the transfer with someone. My phone could be running this protocol with every single person in this room, and only those who actually have something in common would my phone notify me of such a result. And it could happen just as I walk throughout the city throughout the day. And there's my information is not being lost unless outside from what the function's revealing. So that's kind of the potential and the ideas we have for the applications, and we've taken some steps towards implementing these in practice. We have built a secure computation framework, a framework that allows developers to write these privacy-preserving functions without knowing all the details of the implementation. So it's Java-based, and it applies all known optimizations. And for details on garbled circuits specifically and how our framework works, I invite you to Jens' talk on Friday. It's the last talk, so that's an incentive to stay. But it's interesting nonetheless. So, and it's available now for download. So since it's written in Java, it made sense to see what would happen if we ported it to Android, where the applications are also written in Java. And what we found initially running on Nexus One phones, which would be a mid-range phone today, is that it was 1,000 times slower than the speeds that we saw on the desktop, which is pretty significant. This is for a number of reasons. The processors are not necessarily optimized for pure speed, but rather battery life. And there's no cryptographic hardware module to do these all the cryptographic operations we're performing throughout the computation. With that, we were still able to implement the common context application I described. And we were able to compare two address books of 128 contexts in less than 150 seconds, which when you take, for those familiar with the field, doing such a computation on a mobile device 5 years ago was kind of unheard of. Now we're able to do this in a reasonable amount of time on something as simple and as a smartphone. So that speed wasn't to get to that speed. What we found is that there are a few things you need to keep in mind when dealing with these lower power devices, and one of them was the simplicity of the JVM and the simplicity and how much memory we have available to us. So we use big integers throughout the framework as essentially bit vectors to do to store information and to manipulate it. And what we found was that because Java's big integer is immutable, i.e., once it's created, it cannot change. Every time we did any manipulation, it would have to be run by the garbage collector to free the memory. And because there's less than, I think, 30 megabytes on the heap in Android 2.0, this was happening all the time. And it resulted in about half of our computation time. So simply implementing a mutable big integer class and that's optimized kind of for what we're doing and doesn't invoke the garbage collector nearly as often, we were able to reduce running time by half. And it's these kinds of things that you kind of have to keep in mind when you're, it's not simply just copy-pasting the library over to get a reasonable result. For details on how efficiency improvements and a demo of this application, I invite you to the poster session. We have a couple posters related to this, and specifically the one shown on smartphones. You can play it out yourself. Another optimization for speeding these kinds of applications up on Android specifically is the introduction of an Android 3.0 development tool called RenderScript, which allows you to write C99 code closer to hardware and still maintain cross-platform compatibility. Interesting to note is that this platform is built for multiple cores, and also if you write it once and it can run on the CPU or the GPU, depending on complexity, which given the fact that any Android tablet you buy now has two processors and a GPU available to it, we can really, implementing this, not only closer to hardware, but vastly increasing throughput would be very beneficial. So talked about some of the potential applications and talked about some of the implementation difficulties, but now I'm going to move into what are kind of the future thoughts we have in terms of research specifically and how we want to move forward. One thing to note is that in general, when you talk about practical garbled circuit protocols, we're talking about the semi-honest threat model, which requires that both parties follow the protocol as specified. They can't deviate from it, and they can't start inserting malicious input. The question is this a valid model for the applications? As it turns out, you can justify it for a subset of applications, especially those where only one party needs the input. This is good enough, needs the result of the function, and this is good enough. Also, there's work in building garbled circuit protocols with the malicious model in mind and circuit secure computation with the malicious model in mind. Another alternative is to attest to the code running on the other device. And there's a lot of work going on in software-based attestation, but whether or not the fact that these mobile devices tend to have more uniform software and hardware stacks is really advantageous or makes this possible is still an open question. Another thing that kind of makes the mobile device interesting is this existing trust relationship between the major carriers, the users and the customers of those carriers, and the phones themselves. So some functions, if you were to repeat them with the same party a large number of times, you're leaking a bit of information each time. If I do the common contacts intersection and I keep changing my address book to all these things, I'll eventually reverse engineer your entire contact list. So we need to kind of limit who we're interacting with in a logical sense. And since the carriers can reasonably identify and locate devices on their network, maybe they can act as simply a pairing. They don't participate in the computation, but they validate that two parties are able to participate in this together. And this is kind of the beginning of how we can possibly exploit this de facto trust relationship, because there's only five major carriers, two are 80% of the market. And so this is could be very valuable for leveraging certain aspects of this. And one last thing I want to talk about for future directions is how we can take advantage and integrate these kinds of computations into the operating system. So it could be that the operating system has standard displays for applications that only interact with data in a secure way. We'll probably want to separate in some kind of visual manner or in the app stores themselves the applications that participate and take care of their data in such a trustworthy way and those that don't. Furthermore, you could even imagine the operating system treating certain stores of data as only should be interacted with if the application is going to use transmit it in a privacy-preserving protocol. So an application may only transmit the contents of the contact list through a secure computation protocol. So in summary, we want to try to get the best of both worlds. We want to build useful applications that are social while maintaining the trust of the users and maintaining the integrity, the privacy of their data. However, there's a lot to be done in terms of increasing performance for very large applications, and there's research questions for how we answer the threat models and how we might leverage the carrier to increase speed or do things like pairing. And then there's also practical issues, such as how do you teach a developer what it means to use a privacy-preserving, a secure computation protocol, and how do you get that information to the users? How do you teach them the difference between an application that's doing this and the SSL lock on their browser? They don't really understand the difference. And it's hard to explain to those in our field, and much less it's going to be hard to explain to your mother why she should use these applications. The application we wrote, the Common Context application, is available now through the QR code or at that URL. We're working on submitting it to the Android market. It doesn't like the screenshots we were submitting. So I don't know. Anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.
Let's thank our speaker.